This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, good rainy Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. President Obama returned home to the University of Chicago last week to pitch Judge Merrick Garland as his choice for the Supreme Court to fill the vacancy left by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia. And during a question and answer session with law students at the U of C, he was asked by one student what Garland brings to the table when it comes to diversity.
At no point did I say, oh, you know what, you know, I need a black lesbian, you know, from Skokie. In that slot, can you find me one? You know, that's just not how I've approached it. It turns out that if the process is fair and you are saying that it's important that our courts are reflective of a changing society, you'll end up with a really good cross-section of people who are excellent. And that's who we've been able to appoint. And so when I look at Merrick Garland, that was the person that, you know, the difference between the Supreme Court is just a handful of seats come up at any given time now. I appointed a Latino woman and another woman right before that. So, he's a white guy, but he's a really outstanding jurist. Sorry.
That was President Obama speaking to students at the University of Chicago. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Democratic State Senator Michael Hastings from Tinley Park. Senator, thank you very much for getting up with me this morning.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks.
And traversing through the snow / rain / sleet or whatever to come downtown this morning. First, you were sitting in here in studio while I was speaking with Senator Menard about the changes in his proposed changes in the state school aid formula, and I was wondering where do you fall on that issue? It's a very contentious one.
So I think Senator Menard, when he spoke of the inequities in education across Illinois, there are a lot of inequities from southern Illinois to northern Illinois. I so happen to fall in one of those districts where it's Will and Cook County, so I have extreme losers and extreme winners. And in both counties, it's different property tax assessments. So for me, I'd like to see some sort of property tax reform along with school education funding reform.
Well, and that's why I kind of posed that question that actually it was brought to me from a reader of the Tribune about the issue of that, the differing ways that property assessments are calculated in Cook County versus the rest of the state.
Yeah, if you look at Will County right now, the property value or residential assessment rates and commercial assessment rates are far different than they are in Cook County. Right now, it's better to live in Cook County and run a business in Will County, and that's sort of not the way it should be. It should be equitable across the board. And I hope as we keep on, you know, investigating and pushing for legislation for school funding reform that we actually look at that.
How much of your school administrators are looking at that issue as well as the overall issue of the lack of a budget?
I will assure you that every school superintendent in my district from elementary to high school is watching this very closely. I served on a school board for 4 years, so I have a very in-touch communication with my superintendents. Let's put it this way, there's not a day that goes by where one of them doesn't call.
Okay, but what about as far as concern about obviously this year, the only part of the budget that the governor signed was the elementary and secondary schools budget. But now, you know, where is there going to be an elementary and secondary schools budget for the next school year?
Well, I would hope so. I can tell you that the budget impasse has drastically affected the south suburbs disproportionately than it has to the rest of the state of Illinois. And K through 12 is just a component of the overall budget.
Well, how so?
So if you look at the impasse as a whole, we've had a lot of social services and those that have developmental disabilities, mental health illnesses, senior citizen home care, child care services. Those are all have been adversely impacted in my area. And that's something for me where I've had an open discussion with fellow members of the legislature legislature and the governor's office and saying, hey, look, we're being disproportionately hurt out here, especially in child care. I think you see a great percentage of our child care facilities shutting down, or also not a lot of families allowed to get in because the process takes so long.
Well, and we've talked on this program, too, about those kinds of services. Should magically a resolution on a budget be approved and there's money coming back, that doesn't necessarily mean that these social services come back.
And that's true. I can tell you that some of the social service companies that have been shut down or gone out of business probably won't come back. But also another issue that's come out of this budget impasse that our back bills are starting to accumulate so much that, you know, we're going to start having to allocate money to pay back those back bills as well. So we have a pretty big complex problem on our hands, but I do think that if everyone works together, I think we can get to a solution. It's going to take a lot of work, though, Rick.
Have you seen any signs that would conclude anybody to believe a solution is at hand?
I would be remiss to say that, you know, before the primary election, I really didn't see any progress. You know, and after the primary election, you know, you start seeing people talk more and more about it. But it is election season, and people do really different things during election season that probably aren't in the best interest for the state of Illinois.
So not till after the election.
I'm committed to working throughout.
But understood.
I could tell you this. There's certain, you know, people in positions of power, our governor, for example, who may not, you know, feel the same way. And although his position changes on a monthly basis, I would just like to see some consistency, and I would also like to see some of the trust restored between the legislature and the executive branch. It's not a one-way street.
I mean, I remember the days of Rod Blagojevich, for example, and I'm not comparing anything that Blagojevich did to certainly Governor Rauner, but that issue of trust was just so evaporated that you had legislators asking the governor to sign memorandums of understanding in writing to make sure that deals that were made were actually lived up to. I mean, is that level of trust, is that gone? Do you think?
Luckily for me, I was in Iraq, I think, during the time that Rob
Wait, luckily,
was
there. Now,
I don't
what
know
is
that's
it?
A bad thing or
yeah.
a good thing, but
I was just going to say, luckily for you, you were in Iraq.
Yeah.
Yes.
A different perspective on life, I think.
Understood.
But, you know, for me, in terms of trust, you know, the governor should get out and really interface more with the legislators and kind of ease up on his extreme positions. You know, for a guy who represents over 20,000 members of labor unions across, you know, in my region, you know, coming out in an extreme stance of let's shut down unions and not have a right to collectively bargain, I think is a pretty hard stance that he probably shouldn't start off with.
I want to talk to you about legislation that you've proposed that which has generated some controversy, but it's legislation that would allow local units of government to more easily be able to contract out to a third-party vendor the ability to try to recover debts that are owed to that local government, sales taxes, delinquent taxes, fees that haven't been paid. Can you run us through what this is all about?
So just to frame it, so what happens is that towns are entitled to sales tax revenue from their businesses that they have inside their town. And when you make a purchase, the sales tax goes to the Department of Revenue, and then the Department of Revenue redistributes it to other towns. The Department of Revenue runs on such an antiquated system that some of those revenues that may take place in Tinley Park may go to Schaumburg or some other town. So there's information that the Department of Revenue collects in terms of where the revenues go, where the businesses are, and it pretty much can pinpoint where the tax dollar should go to. So what this bill does is it allows towns to contract with technologically savvy companies to analyze all the tax revenue and say, hey, we're missing out on, you know, $300,000, $250,000, because it's going to X, Y, and Z towns.
Almost like those communities that, like, do their own censuses as an effort to try to get more of that local government distributive fund, their bigger share of the income tax, because they would contend that we haven't counted properly.
Right, and in a lot of cases it hasn't. And there's some huge towns in Illinois, Springfield, Moline, Chicago Heights are just three of the few that have realized that I missed out on $250,000 in tax revenue that I was already owed. So it's not new information. It's just information that's out there that is being audited. And then that those revenues will go back to the town in which they were entitled to anyways. My issue that I have is, you know, not only getting the revenue back to where it belongs to, but also protecting that data and making sure that, you know, the data doesn't get into the wrong hands.
And that's where the controversy, I think, does exist. And we're going to talk more about that when we come back. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Thank my friends from Blackest Crow, blackestcrowmusic.com, for the music accompaniment today to the show. It's Hank Williams' tune, singing Waterfall. I'm here in the Allstate Showcase studio with Democratic State Senator Mike Hastings from Tinley Park, and the senator has a bill that is an effort to try to get the right amount of tax reimbursements to local communities, and part of this is to allow the use of third parties to analyze the data and then go back to the state and say, you know, hey, you owe us, we're owed a little bit. I mean, the issue that has raised controversy is whether there is something nefarious about allowing a third party vendor to see tax data, and
right,
and if it falls into the wrong hands.
See, people misconstrue this. They think, well, we're giving out Social Security numbers, we're giving out all this personal information. That's not what it is. We're giving out the business name, the address, the net revenues that are due to the town. It's not like we're giving out sensitive data towards, like, where you live as, you know, as a person. I think that's where people get confused in this. Third parties are used in a lot of different situations. And in this one, it's no different than anything else. You use a third party to audit your village. You use a third party to be your legal representation. This is no different. The third party will go ahead and analyze your data, and then they'll find out what revenues that you're missing out on that you're already owed. So confidentiality for me is far important. Right now, the department, any municipality can request this information. Not all of them can analyze it. But the Department of Revenue, what they do now is they put all this information on a CD and they send it through the mail. It's not encrypted. It's not, there's no mechanism in there to protect it. They send it through the mail. So Joe Schmo, who intercepts the mail, can get all the tax revenue data for a municipality. That's not the way it should be either. So my bill does a few things. We want to have some sort of encryption, some sort of protection for that data. So if a third party gets it, that information is locked, and there's, you know, some sort of security measure there. Not to mention these companies have to sign a confidentiality agreement with the town, and then they have to act only with the town as long as they're doing business, they can have the information. So for me, that's important, is to protect this data for the town, because once it gets out, it's not appropriate for it to get out.
And so it lasts as long as a contract period, basically, and after that, that data has to be returned or whatever.
Right.
Now, one of the things is, so if a company gets hired and they analyze the data, and, you know, Municipality X claims they're owed, you know, $2 million, what forces the state to pay that?
So the city's entitled to pay the money anyway. So the Department of Revenue has all the data of what revenues are supposed to be collected and then where it's supposed to go. Because of their antiquated system, like I said before,
right,
it goes to the wrong town. So once they analyze the data and then the company shows proof that it's supposed to go to that town, then the Department of Revenue can reallocate the money back to the town. And I think that's what's most important, because towns like Chicago Heights, Bloomington, Moline, they've actually found close to, between the three towns, close to $1 million in missing revenue that they were supposed to get, but it went somewhere else. So these towns, they contract with these third-party vendors, and these third-party vendors find the monies that they would have never had if they would have never looked.
So, but if, say it goes to the wrong town, so then there's an adjustment made by Department of Revenue to...
That's correct.
Kind of
equalize it and make it right again. And also to prevent it from happening again.
Why can't we just get the Department of Revenue a better computer system?
You know, that'd be nice, but those things cost money, and in the state of Illinois right now, we're kind of struggling in that regard. But
if it's so antiquated, I mean, and yeah, I know computer systems cost money, but I mean, the price of computers has kind of, you know, come down a great deal.
I think one of the things, you know, as a Democratic senator that I can agree with the administration on is the fact that across the board, not only in the Department of Revenue, but human services.
Oh, the IT.
We need to invest in, you know, I laughed when I saw that some of our computer systems are run on Fortran. You know, as a guy who's new to the legislature, I said, you know, big business is so far ahead, but, you know, state government takes time to make a transition, and that's one transition we should definitely make.
Is it just because they don't want to spend the money?
Sometimes it's hard to find the money these days.
And, well, that's definitely true.
And that's part of the reason why my bill is, I introduced my bill so local governments can find money for their municipalities. I know they're struggling. You know, and the state needs to find better ways to make better efficiencies for itself.
Well, speaking of local governments, and I have to wonder if in some case this isn't also, your legislation isn't also rooted in concerns on the municipal level that their share of the state income tax will continue to be somewhat in jeopardy because of the financial straits that we're going through in Illinois. Am I correct in that?
I can tell you that every mayor in my district, I represent 20 different towns, is concerned about their share of the local government distributive fund. It's money in which they pay in and money in which they want to get back so they can help provide services for their town. You know, and I can tell you that's one thing we talk about every year during the budget is how is LGDF appropriated to our municipalities.
And that's the state's share of the income tax.
That's right.
But, I mean, there's no assurance that may not get hit somewhere in the end.
No, you're right. But I can tell you there's no greater lobbyist to a legislator than their individual mayor that supports them. And I can tell you that mayors across Illinois, if you're afraid of getting your LGDF cut, you need to call your legislator. And I can tell you, if a legislator doesn't listen to the mayors in their community, I think they're wrong. Legislators take a lot of advice and consent from their municipality leaders, and, you know, because they're the pulse of our state, they're the pulse of the community. They know what's going on.
What about legislation even going, carrying it further? I mean, there's been talk about having legislation that assures local governments get their share as a continuing appropriation rather than something that may be subject to the whims in any given budget year.
So myself and Representative Anthony DeLuca of Chicago Heights, we've actually proposed legislation to ensure that the towns get their 10% of their local government distributive fund. It's sort of stalled in the House and it's stalled in the Senate, but we're going to continue to advocate for that.
Why is it stalled? I mean, I would think your mayor is here again as being a
powerful
lobby. A lot
of mayors, but, you know, in terms of balancing the budget as a whole, I think that other people want a more collective approach than, you know, promising one entity one thing and not promising another entity another. So they want to have everything on the table when we make a decision in order to produce a budget.
Kind of like if school districts, per se, were given that kind of guarantee of an automatic appropriation that isn't subject to the whims of the General Assembly.
Right.
It sounds like there's a lot of talking that still needs to be done in Springfield, though, to put all these various puzzle pieces together.
There's a lot of time left, Rick, in the legislative session here. You know, a lot of time can be 1 week or 1 month or 1 day. In my experience, I've been down there for 3.5 years, and I can tell you that it's been, you know, coming from running the ground and air operations for one of our commanding generals in Iraq to go in the Springfield. There's a lot of similarities between combat and Springfield, but, you know, there's a lot of work to do. It's just going to make, we need a lot of commitment from all branches of the government, the executive branch, legislative branch, to really make sure that, you know, we get the job done.
But are you satisfied that everybody's got that commitment?
No, in
all parties? I'm not asking you to.
No, I'm not.
I don't want you to necessarily name names, but I think the very valid question, and we kind of touched on this, is if you're looking at political advantage, if somebody's looking at political advantage, certainly that diminishes the desire to try to reach a settlement.
I would hope that, you know, all legislators have in the executive branch have all the commitment that they need to get the job done. But, you know, it's unfortunate some don't. And I'm not going to name names, but I'll tell you this much, you know, to hold people hostage for political gain is wrong.
And there's a lot of hostages.
A lot of hostages, and you're seeing a lot of hostages go under. And for me, that's unacceptable. You know, our job is to be the voice for the voiceless in Springfield, and I'm committed to doing that. And I think that's why the people in my district reelected me this year.
That's Michael Hastings, Democratic State Senator from Tinley Park. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning here in the Allstate Showcase studio.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
We'll be back with more right after this.